With David Hyde, I'm Marcy Silman. Outgoing Afghan President Hamid Karzai's government says it was kept in the dark about the deal President Obama brokered to free Army Sergeant Bo Bergdahl. The decision threatens the delicate relationship between the two governments. The United States hopes to get a fresh start in Afghanistan, though. Afghanis are scheduled to choose a new president later this month. So who are the two candidates? Michael O'Hanlon is senior fellow at the Brookings Institution. He was an international observer at the 2009 Afghan elections. O'Hanlon says that both candidates have strong ties to the West. Abdullah Abdullah in particular is well known to American officials.
But also has a lot of street cred, if you will, with fellow Afghans because he never left the region during the wars of, you know, the 1980s and 90s, or at least not for extended periods of time. He was often as a physician treating refugees over the border in Pakistan. There was a time when he became more actively involved in the battle against the Taliban as part of the Northern Alliance. He is, as many know, half Tajik and half Pashto. So he's partly from that, or his background is partly from the, you know, the Pashto or Pashtun ethnic group, which tends to provide Afghanistan's presidents, and that's what Hamid Karzai is. But he's also half Tajik, and that is the group that dominated the Northern Alliance that held off, you know, against the Taliban back in the late 1990s when everybody else had been vanquished. And Abdullah stayed around and was part of the broader military and political leadership team with that Northern Alliance. So he's got that kind of background. He was, as many will remember, the first foreign minister of modern Afghanistan. So after the Taliban were overthrown and Karzai became the president, Abdullah was his foreign minister for a few years. And so they were teammates. But then after a while, he became disenchanted with the president or just decided to go his own way and ran against President Karzai in 2009 and lost, of course. He was the runner-up. And there were allegations of various kinds of fraud. But I think Abdullah concluded he couldn't beat Karzai regardless and so did not push the idea of having the second round to which he was technically entitled. And so he's sort of been loyal opposition in that regard.
So what specifically would he do if he were elected? What are his concrete plans for Afghanistan?
Well, it's a good question. There are only two or three that are really distinctive and clear enough that you could point to them as likely areas of change. And they tend to have to do, first and foremost, with political reform. Right now, the Afghan political system is very top-heavy. It gives a lot of power to the president, who can actually appoint all the district and provincial mayors and governors, and who really doesn't need the parliament for that much, can sort of railroad things through parliament. And, you know, he's the only guy who can really start the legislative process rolling. And Abdullah wants to change some of that. So he's running for an office that he wants to weaken as soon as he would gain it. And I think that's to his credit. So, for example, he wants the direct election of governors in these provinces. There are 34 provinces in Afghanistan. Each one averages about 1 million people. So they're fairly small political entities by the standards of states or provinces in other parts of the world. But he wants to have direct elections there. He also wants to give the parliament a bit more independence. Right now, the upper house of parliament has a lot of its members appointed by the president, and he wants to change that. So a lot of what he's after is political reform and sort of a broadening of the political base of the country. That would be one big set of initiatives. He certainly has been unhappy with the way President Karzai deals with the United States and the Western community. So either Abdullah or Ghani, to foreshadow where we're headed next, talking about Ashraf Ghani,
right.
Either one of them would certainly want a less prickly, less controversial relationship with the United States and want to build on the earlier spirit of cooperation from the, you know, 2002, 3, 4, 5 period before things got so testy with Hamid Karzai. That'd be one more thing you could certainly point to. And then the last thing is that Abdullah knows full well he's got to try to get along with Pakistan. But in many ways, the fact that he's from the Northern Alliance and that he has this Tajik background could complicate that because Pakistan tends to see this Northern Alliance group, made up primarily of Tajiks, as a group that's friendly to India and not friendly towards Pakistan. And Pakistan, I don't think it's totally or even partially justified in that view, but that will lead to even more likelihood of the Pakistanis trying to stir the pot. And so that's a challenge for Abdullah. It's not because of any policy that he's articulating or any anti-Pakistan bias that he has that I'm aware of, but it's because of the predictable way in which Pakistan itself would likely respond to his presidency.
Well, Michael Hanlon, that's a whole other conversation about how one of the things I think Americans don't understand is the complexities of ethnic relationships in Central Asia. But as you mentioned, we'd like to talk, before we get into all those complexities, about Abdullah's main, well, his challenger, Ashraf Ghani. Who is he?
Ashraf Ghani is a brilliant economist, and he's got his degree from Columbia University, PhD. He spent a lot of years working for the World Bank, many of them, I think, based out of Washington. So he's also very familiar to Westerners. He, be a guy I would have been happy to take a college course from. I mean, his English is very good, as with Abdullah. His command of academics is extraordinary. He really helped the Afghans through a lot of their early financial and economic crises. He was the finance minister in the early years after the Taliban. So, again, in that 2002-2003-2004 period. He also ran for president in 2009, just like Abdullah. He also lost, obviously. He was defeated by a much larger margin. And so he's really improved his political standing a great deal in this election compared to his performance last time. He's, he's a more academic kind of personality, but he's able to be effective, and he's quite strong-willed. Some people think he is capable of losing his temper a bit, and that may be true, but, I've never seen him lose his temper for a silly reason. He's trying to make things work in a land that's obviously still quite dysfunctional and challenged in many ways. And so I would be encouraged equally by a possible Ghani presidency. I would expect him to fight corruption better than virtually anybody else I can think of. Abdullah wants to reform the political system. Ghani wants to reform the economic system. And I think each one of them would do a little bit of what the other's chief focus might be, but they come at it from slightly different vantage points. So Ghani, with his background in economics, has thought very hard about how you reduce corruption, about how you get Afghanistan through these next couple of years when there's fewer foreign dollars pumping into the country, and therefore there's going to be a bit of a downward trajectory in the likely economic performance of the country. Just there'll be a little bit of a recessionary effect from this reduced spending, and he's got ideas on how to handle that. The most controversial thing about Ghani is probably his running mate, his number one vice president, because they each have two. But his top vice president would be this guy, General Dostum, who is a warlord from the Uzbek community, one of the most cynical and brutal of all the warlords who's been involved in Afghanistan for the last 30 years. And a lot of people are very unhappy about that choice. I think Ghani saw it as doing a necessary deal with a voting bloc that he needed to have in order to have a chance of winning this election. But it may ironically cost him, because Dostum is so unfavorably viewed among many of the two main ethnic groups, the Pashtun and the Tajik groups, that he may be actually taking votes away from Ghani in those two areas. Ghani himself is a Pashtun, 100%. But he has made a lot of enemies among his fellow Pashtun by his choice of running mate.
I'm talking with Michael O'Hanlon, who's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute. And one thing I'm hearing from your descriptions, Michael, is that both of these men have a long association with the United States. They seem very influenced by the West. What does the U.S. think of each of these candidates in the official capacity?
Well, the United States, I think, would be happy to have either one, recognizing neither one's going to have an easy path ahead. But I think there'd be a sense of relief at being out of this argumentative relationship we have with President Karzai. Of course, Karzai has the stature, and I wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal a couple of months ago in which I argued we might miss Karzai in certain ways that right now would seem incredulous or hard to believe to many Americans who are so frustrated with him. But nonetheless, there would be the sense of a fresh start. And I think that would be, at this point, all to the good. Karzai's done this job for a dozen years. That's probably too long to expect any person to do it without really suffering some great fatigue and emotional duress. And I think either one of these gentlemen is going to have a sense that they need to get along with the United States and the international community. And I think, therefore, Washington would be glad just to see the election process wrap up in a way that's punctual and that creates a sense there really was a winner that most of the country accepts. Obviously, one of the concerns here has been either that the Taliban disrupt the election process so much in certain parts of the country that the voting gets really suppressed in certain areas, and therefore the outcome is shaped by the violence as much as by the candidates themselves, or that there'd be a delay in the elections or widespread allegations of fraud and to the point where the loser refuses to recognize the victory of the winner and you have a protracted period of contention or even worse, you know, street protests and violence. I think those are the main worries people have, not so much whether it would be Ghani or Abdullah.
Well, I want to just follow up on that last thing. How likely are we to see a fair and safe election?
Well, it's not going to be fair by the standards we all would like, or even by American standards, which obviously are not always completely free and fair either. But it's improving. I mean, the first round was much better than 2009. I was an election observer in 2009. For that presidential race, and again for the parliamentary elections in 2010. And this time, with many fewer of us from the international community, the Afghans did a much better job. I don't know if there was a correlation, but in any event, they really have found a way to identify the fraudulent votes. It appears there were a lot fewer of them. There were still a lot, but there were a lot fewer. In the range of 10% of the vote total appear to have been illegitimate or, you know, ballot stuffed or what have you. And we're going to have to watch in the second round to make sure that doesn't get worse. But the Afghans do have some independent entities that are pretty good at monitoring this. The candidates watch each other to make sure that they have a presence with their own observers in many of these polling stations. So they can hopefully certify that there is no ballot box stuffing or other irregularity. And I'm encouraged. Now, the problem is that Ghani and Abdullah are both strong candidates. And so you could imagine an outcome in which even if the election were completely clean and proper, the winner would only win by a few percentage points. And that means that 10% uncertainty from cheating and fraud and violence could be enough to affect the outcome. But what I hope is that the 10% of irregularities will sort of partially cancel each other out, and whoever loses will be able to accept the outcome. That's going to be the big question going forward.
Just a last question. As you described these two candidates, it seems like Afghanistan might be served well to have both of them somehow in the government.
I'm just impressed by your prescience on this, because even though we don't usually think of that as an option with elections, Afghans do. And Afghans have been asking for a year or two, is there a way to incorporate both? I mean, in some kind of a grand coalition government of some kind, one possibility would be that, let's say if Abdullah wins, because he got 12% more vote in the first round than Ghani. So it's plausible that he could win and that Ghani would recognize going in that, you know, that Abdullah is the likely winner. It's not guaranteed, of course, but let's just say that it turns out that that Abdullah has an 8-point lead by the polls as we come out of the June 14th runoff. Maybe Ghani could become, in effect, a prime minister figure. There isn't really a strong prime minister role right now in Afghanistan, but if Abdullah were prepared to accord more powers to Ghani, even if that was done sort of at the president's, you know, sort of within his prerogatives and not as some change of the law, but just as a practical interim measure, that might take some of the edge off and allow the Ghani supporters in this scenario to be happy or at least okay with the outcome that I'm positing. Whether it could really work in the other direction, I don't know. You know, that would imply that there had been a big turnaround in the vote. It's not clear if Abdullah and Ghani get along well enough professionally to be able to make that happen. So we'll have to see. But yes, this is the sort of idea that is sometimes tossed around in Afghanistan.
Well, Michael O'Hanlon, this is fascinating. Thank you so much for taking time to talk with me about it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Michael O'Hanlon is visiting lecturer at Princeton University and a senior fellow at the Brookings Institute. The Afghan elections are scheduled to take place on June 14th.